Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar on the Ontario Forest Certification Program for Conservation Partners and the Public. Just a few housekeeping items before we begin. The webinar and audio will be recorded today to provide a copy of the information to interested but unavailable participants. This is an important note. The audio is being provided separately through Fertilizer Canada's conference line, so I've made a note there. If you're not already connected to the audio, it gives participants a chance to phone that number and code. Also, I'd like to please ask you at this time to place your phones on mute during the presentation to reduce background noise. You can either do this by pressing *6 or there is features on cell phones to place your phone on mute. Thank you. The Public Conservation Partners webinar is scheduled to take place today from 1 till 3 p.m., but it may end early depending on the discussion and question and answer period. There will be a prompted poll before and after the webinar presentation. These questions will be available on the webinar platform and automatically prompted by Fertilizer Canada. We ask that you answer these quick questions to help us better understand awareness levels of the 4R program. There will be a scheduled question and answer at the end of the webinar session, and therefore, to keep the webinar consistent and for timing purposes, please save your questions for the designated Q&A. There's a few options of how you can ask your question. First, you may raise your hand on the GoToWebinar platform. There is a sidebar that should be visible on your screen and a orange arrow that you can press to expand that screen. That gives you the option to press a raise your hand button that indicates to me that you have a question. Or you may also type your question into the chat bar, which gives you an anonymous option to voice your question. With the chat question feature, I can then read your question aloud and give the 4R Ontario steering committee speakers a chance to answer your questions or concerns. So all the presenters of the Ontario 4R certification webinar are relevant members of the 4R Ontario steering committee. Today's speakers are Cassandra Cotton, who's the Director of Sustainability at Fertilizer Canada, Anne Leffler from the Grand River Conservation Authority, who's representing Conservation Ontario, and Ron Campbell, who is the Operations and Member Service Manager at OAB, Ontario Agribusiness Association. So the webinar will begin with a short survey for participants, and then Cassandra Cotton from Fertilizer Canada will present the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program and outline the program's initiatives across Canada and specifically in Ontario. Next, Anne Leffler from the Grand River Conservation Authority will represent Conservation Ontario and introduce the 4R Ontario Certification Program by presenting the 4R Ontario Steering Committee members, explaining the development process of the proposed standards, and outlining the scope, implementation process, and structure of the 4R Ontario Certification Program. Finally, Ron Campbell from the Ontario Agribusiness Association will outline the proposed standards in more detail. Then the webinar will be concluded with a short post-webinar poll, and before the end of the webinar, we have scheduled a time for question and answer period where the speakers will be available to answer your questions. So with that, let's get started. At this time, you should be prompted with survey questions on your screen. There are a total of 3 questions, and you will be asked each question one at a time. On the webinar platform, you can select your answer accordingly of 1 out of 5, and only you can see your answers, and therefore they're anonymous. We will only be collecting the aggregated answers. We will give you the next couple of minutes or 30 to 45 seconds for each question, and after all 3 questions have been answered, then we will continue with the presentation. Please feel free to let me know if you experience any technical difficulties or concerns during the poll questions. Thank you. Okay, thank you, everyone. Your answers to the poll questions are much appreciated. I would now like to welcome our first speaker, Cassandra Cotton.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking part today. So I'm just going to provide you with a brief overview of what 4R Nutrient Stewardship is. For those of you who are familiar, this will be maybe a little bit foreign for you, but for those of you who aren't too familiar, just to
kind of give you a basis for where we're headed with this. So the four nutrient stewardship concept is kind of an innovative approach developed by the industry as it relates to fertilizer best management practices. So it takes into consideration economic, social, and environmental considerations of nutrient stewardship, and that is essential to any sustainability of an agricultural system as it relates to fertilizer application. So we'd like to kind of say that the concept is simple, but the implementation is knowledge intensive and very site specific. So it essentially refers to applying the right source of nutrients at the right rate, at the right time, and in the right place. And I'll go into more detail about those four kind of pillars. So the agricultural industry, government, conservation authorities in Ontario, and farm groups are committed to sustainable food production. And the four nutrient stewardship system is the direction that we've decided to go in terms of implementing that sustainability, increasing farmer profitability, and ensuring that that happens with taking environmental considerations into play. It's based on a science-based framework, so there's science behind the four R's in terms of the implementation and validating the actual best management practices under the four R's as it relates to the economic and environmental considerations. So the right source means ensuring a balanced supply of essential plant nutrients, and that includes both granule, fertilizers, liquid, and or manure. It was developed with the chemical fertilizer in mind, but definitely applies, the concepts are applicable to manure as well. So the right rate is applying just enough fertilizer to meet the needs of the plant while accounting for the nutrients that are already in the soil. The timing essentially means applying fertilizer when the plant will benefit the most, and obviously avoiding times when fertilizer can be lost to the environment. And then in terms of placement, ensuring that you're placing the fertilizer where the plants can easily use it and where it's less likely to be lost to water or air. So I'll just go a little bit more in depth into those four source, rate, time, and place considerations a little bit. Starting with right source, which is the first pillar. The first key principle of right source is the idea of a balanced supply of nutrients. So since the nutrient in shortest supply limits growth, if you add a nutrient to the soil that's already there in sufficient quantity, the crop won't respond to it, or at least not in a positive way. And the other side of the coin is if you have two nutrients that are in short supply and you only add one of them, the crop won't respond, or at least not very much, until the second one is added. So you have to ensure that don't add what's already there, and when you're adding things that aren't there, you need to balance them, essentially, is what that means. The second important principle when we're making source decisions at the grower level is to make sure that the source of the nutrient is a good match for the soil, so it needs to suit the soil properties. So that means when you have to take into account both soil properties like pH and soil conditions like moisture. So, for example, avoid applying urea to high pH soils due to higher risk of volatilization losses. In terms of rate, the second kind of pillar, the two most important scientific principles underlying rate decisions essentially are soil supply and plant demand. So the idea behind the supply side principle is that growers need to assess all sources that are contributing nutrients to the crop when determining nutrient addition rates. And while this is, I guess, conceptually a pretty simple idea, it's often actually difficult to put into practice because there is a multitude of factors that interact to control the nutrient supply. So assessing nutrient supply is not obviously an exact science, but that said, we do have some tools, for example, soil testing, that gives us good approximations of nutrient supply in the soil. And when it comes to nutrients added as fertilizer or manure, we can directly measure
the quantities added to the cropping system. And then on the demand side, demand is influenced by variables in the cropping system, including things like moisture and temperature and soil type, which all help determine crop growth and how much of each nutrient they'll need. So demand also can vary in terms of the crop type, so wheat would be different than corn, and even further than that, based on the variety of the crop that's chosen. So, in terms of timing, so the right time for nutrients is closely linked to the supply and demand idea that we just covered in the last slide. But if you think about the way a crop grows, an annual crop such as corn, for example, early in the season, essentially the crop is small and the nutrient demand is actually fairly low. But in most parts of Canada at that time, soils are still cold and the soil supply of nutrients like phosphorus, as an example, can be too low to meet even that small demand. Once a crop is established, the growth rate obviously accelerates and the nutrient demand increases through the vegetative and early reproductive stages. So then as the crop matures, the growth rate and nutrient uptake slows and then stops, and then as the season progresses, soil supply also can tend to increase for nutrients like nitrogen that are supplied in part because of mineralization of soil organic matter. So essentially, all that to say that we want to make sure that nutrients are there when the crop needs them, whether it's early in the spring or mid-season, and we want to take into account that the soil supply of these nutrients changes as the season progresses. And then the second principle there in terms of determining the time of loss risk. So consideration of the risk of nutrient loss when deciding the timing of growers' application. So when nutrients are added to the soil, they don't just sit there until the crop takes them up. They can do things like be lost to runoff, be transformed into gaseous forms and lost to the atmosphere, move below the rooting zone and cause leaching, etc. So these processes can remove nutrients from the available nutrient pool. So it's important for growers to consider these losses when they're making timing decisions, both to ensure adequate supply for the crop and to minimize the environmental impact from losses. And for a lot of growers, too, that's going to be, environmental considerations, but it also has economic considerations for them as well. If they're applying fertilizer and losing it and it's not being taken up by the crop, they're losing profitability there, both in terms of fertilizer, money spent on fertilizer, and also in terms of their yield potential. And then the final kind of pillar there in terms of considerations is surrounded placement. So making sure that nutrients are in the right place means that really we need to think about nutrient placement on the scale of the individual plant and on the larger management unit or landscape basis. So at the smaller scale of individual plants, different crops have different rooting patterns, like corn and wheat, for example, have a fibrous root system with kind of a horizontal orientation, and soybeans, as an example, have a taproot system, so primarily a vertical orientation. So in a sense, corn and wheat have a greater availability to explore the soil near the surface for nutrients, and soybeans have a greater ability to explore the depths. So when we're making placement decisions, particularly for fertilizer, the growers need to consider whether the placement chosen matches the crop's rooting orientation. And that's kind of the first principle under right placement, to consider the rooting patterns. The other way in which placement needs to be considered is with respect to the spatial variability of the landscape. So, we all know that crop yield varies across the field, and this variability in production potential depends on a number of different soil and microclimatic factors. So essentially, right place means that growers need to consider spatial variability at the landscape even when developing the best management practices that they're applying. So in terms of sustainability goals, the other component that the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Framework brings into practice is that there's not only, you know, economic considerations that a farmer needs to take into place, but social considerations and environmental and all together when they're making considerations on their farm. So this slide just kind of outlines some goals that when a grower is implementing a 4R plan with their agri retailer, these are some of the considerations or goals that they'd be looking to meet on their farm in terms of obviously improving their farm productivity by improving return on dollars that they're spending on fertilizer, as an example. Environmentally, obviously preventing nutrient loss from the cropping system, and then socially, really improving productivity of farm labor by appropriate use of technology and best management practices. Those are just some examples. But essentially, the goals need to be something that better nutrient management of the cropping system can influence. So it's good to start with a goal list. We always recommend that's relatively short, and it's really important to show that you're making real progress on a few of the goals in each of these areas. And that's what the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program is about, is really improvement over time. So in terms of implementation and how this is being run across the country and internationally as well, in the U.S. and in at the International Fertilizer Association, 4R is recognized at the FAO and some decisions that the UN is making as well. But within Canada, we're engaging with provincial governments and farm groups, environmental groups, and industry to link each province's kind of objectives for environmental performance with 4R nutrient stewardship and productivity at the farm level. So each province is obviously different, not only in terms of their climate, but their soil types and what they're growing and what kind of demands are on them in terms of the agricultural industry. So as you can see in the map that's placed there, we have projects going on in all the major agricultural regions across the country. Obviously, places like Newfoundland and the territories in BC aren't hotspots for agriculture as much as the prairies and some of the Atlantic provinces and central. So essentially what those are is agreements with those groups, research taking place with university researchers across the country, demonstration farms doing extension work with growers to compare a standard practice as opposed to a 4R practice, and actually getting some environmental and economic metrics around what those are. So in Ontario specifically, we're rolling out this program, which we're talking about today, in terms of the certification program at the ag retailer level. We also do have demonstration farms going on. We have surveying with growers to really understand their best management practices and what they're already doing, where we can see some improvements, as well as research and workshops and training. And really it's to address, an issue that has long been something that we've been dealing with in terms of the algae bloom issue in Lake Erie. But we really feel like this program is supported by all the groups that are working on this in Ontario, really being proactive in terms of addressing the environmental issues related to Lake Erie and phosphorus loading to the lake. And as you know, fertilizer is recognizing it's part of the problem. Definitely not the entire issue, but that we play a part in that, and that we're being proactive to be part of the solution as well. So with that, I'll pass it back over to you, Mackenzie, to get and to talk about what's happening specifically in Ontario with this program. Thanks.
Exactly. Thank you, Cassandra. I'll just take this time now to kindly remind you to please place your phone on mute if you joined the conversation and presentation later, or if you haven't done so yet. And then I'll welcome Lester from the Grand River Conservation Authority and representing Conservation Ontario, and she'll speak to introduce the background and structure of the Ontario Forest Education Program. Thanks, Anne.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a conservation specialist with Grand River Conservation Authority, and I've been a member of the steering committee for a few years representing the interests of the conservation authorities. Did you want to flip to the next slide? Oh, sorry, no, you're on the right one. A few general comments about 4R and Ontario agriculture. We have a lot of valuable and productive farmland in Ontario, and there's a lot of interest in nutrient management for crop production. The province has embraced 4R nutrient stewardship as a valuable tool for meeting agricultural and environmental goals. So the 4R concept is a recognized part of the Ontario government's strategy to reduce nutrient losses from farmland. So specifically, 4R nutrient stewardship was referenced in the draft Canada-Ontario Action Plan for achieving phosphorus loading reductions in Lake Erie. And I know the CA staff who are on this call right now will have noticed that. So what we're discussing today is a voluntary initiative by the fertilizer industry, and it's to demonstrate leadership and also to improve the way that the industry does business. Research suggests that 4R can offer benefits to producers compared to traditional practices. So this is about effective protection and conservation of the province's agricultural soils, water quality, and ecosystem health as they relate to nutrients. One of the good things about the 4R practices is that they are fully adaptable to the diversity of Ontario agriculture, which is important, of course, because every farm is different. Certainly not one size fits all when it comes to fertilizer. Okay, so the development process for our program in Ontario, this slide shows you who some of the players are. I guess the Government of Ontario, Fertilizer Canada, and the Ontario Agribusiness Association have formalized their commitment on agricultural sustainability and environmental action with a combined investment of $300,000 over 3 years. So those three funding partners signed a memorandum of cooperation to help Ontario farmers maximize crop yields with minimum environmental impact. And those other logos you see represent the stakeholder groups on the steering committee and the science and technology working group. So the environmental stakeholders, for example, would include Conservation Ontario, Ministry of Environment and Climate Change, and the Nature Conservancy in Ohio, which has been actively involved in developing the 4R program in Ohio. The memorandum of cooperation also includes developing a 4R specialty certification for the certified crop advisors who advise producers on fertilizer application. And Cassandra also mentioned the growers surveying and the demonstration farms, which is also part of the memorandum of cooperation. But today's webinar is focused on developing that voluntary retailer certification program to accelerate the on-farm adoption of 4R nutrient stewardship as a best practice. Excuse me. So the proposed standards that you will hear about later in this webinar were developed by the steering committee in close collaboration with the 4R Science and Technology Working Group. They're based on the standards used in the Ohio 4R certification program. They were tested for validity and suitability in Ontario in a pilot program in the fall of 2016. And from what I hear, that testing went quite well, but there were some changes made to tweak the standards to work in Ontario conditions. So in addition to the general 4R principles, the standards have incorporated specific criteria for the purposes of addressing regional priorities for water quality. And I should also mention that the steering committee will continuously work with the research community to ensure that the standards stay up to date and provide the most current knowledge available. So before we get into the details of the standards, here are some of the general goals of the program: to optimize crop uptake of nutrients and minimize nutrient losses to the environment, to create long-term positive impacts on water bodies, including reducing eutrophication and the incidence of harmful algal blooms, and to help meet water quality standards, to encourage the sharing of the most up-to-date information about responsible nutrient stewardship with retailers and growers and with other interested groups, and to help the agricultural sector adapt to new research and technology in the area of nutrient stewardship. So with those goals in mind, there are a number of benefits for the public and for conservation partners. First, the 4R certification program aims to improve water quality by providing the nutrient service providers with science-based consistent metrics for nutrient application and management to optimize nutrient availability and to reduce nutrient losses to the environment. So the industry is voluntarily creating this framework so that it can provide end-use customers with proof of environmental sustainability. We have government and conservation partners sitting on the steering committee to ensure that the program and the proposed standards reflect government and environmental organization demands and exceed them. So I've been a member of the steering committee for several years, and I admit I'm impressed by this initiative. So listening to the conversation around the table, I know that the industry is sincere in wanting to protect and restore the ecological health of the Great Lakes and is committed to being part of the solution. I think this is a really good step forward. So a few words here about the scope of the program. It's designed to recognize nutrient service providers who have adopted 4R principles and practices. So nutrient service provider, what does that mean? It includes those who are engaged in the sale of fertilizers to farm customers, those engaged in making fertilizer recommendations to farm customers, and to those engaged in the application of nutrients on farmland. So Ron will be presenting the standards after this. The idea of those standards is to translate the 4R practices into a set of auditable criteria that would demonstrate due diligence and accountability. And I want to repeat, 4R is a voluntary program. It'll be of interest to nutrient service providers across the province, but the initial focus is on the West Basin of Lake Erie. And I know that the major fertilizer retailers in southwestern Ontario have been part of this discussion. So let's talk about the proposed structure of the 4R program in Ontario. The 4R certification standards will be audited via an in-person audit process. The audit will be completed by a third party, specifically the Agrichemical Warehouse Standards Association has been selected as the third party auditor for the program. The standards, which total 37 auditable criteria, are divided into four main sections. 6 training and education criteria, referred to as T, is for training. 12 nutrient recommendation criteria, referred to as R for recommendation. 10 nutrient application criteria, referred to as A for application. And 9 documentation criteria, referred to as D for documentation. Each standard will be re-evaluated on a 2-year cycle by a third-party auditor via an in-person audit to maintain certification. Unless otherwise specified, 100% of the grower customers of the nutrient service provider must meet the requirements specified by the auditable evaluation criteria during every audit year in order to achieve conformance with the standards. So the degree of conformance to the standards will be assessed by the auditor for each auditable evaluation standard. And it's important to note that the ag retailer will only be audited on what the ag retailer can control. Audit results will be reported as comply, not comply, or not applicable. So just to finish up my part of the webinar here, this is how the program will be implemented. It will be on a 2-year audit cycle. It's scheduled to be published on April 1st of this year and implemented in the fall. We're in the middle of the comment period right now, and the proposed comments are open for a public comment until February 28th. Please provide your comments in writing to Mackenzie Smith. You see her email address up there. And I guess that's my part for now. Thanks for your attention.
Great. Thank you, Anne. I'd now like to welcome Ron Campbell from the Ontario Agribusiness Association, who will go through the 37 forest certification standards and the related evaluation criteria for each standard. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, thanks, Mackenzie, and thanks, Anne, for doing the intro to the program. So I'm going to touch on the audit standards that we're going to be using for the, or we're proposing at least at this stage to use in the retailer certification program. I won't go through necessarily them all specifically. It's not the most exciting part of the meeting, but we'll certainly go over the categories and give a sense of what retailers are going to be audited on and how that will be looked at by the auditor. A couple of things before I get right into them. A key thing to remember when you're looking at this is when the retailer is audited, they are only audited on those elements that they can control. And we'll probably get into this a little more as we go through the audit standards, but that's something to keep in mind. And also, you know, to stress this is a voluntary program that we're looking to establish here. So we'll start off then. Excuse me. The first category of audit standards are around training, and there's two components to this training. So on the screen right now we have T1, 2, and 3, and they are all related to staff training by the retailer. The retailer must provide some general 4-hour education to all staff at their location. So not just the staff that's making recommendations, but applicator staff, sales staff, et cetera. And there will be a time during an audit where the auditor will may ask to meet all the applicators or meet the sales staff and just have a general discussion about 4-hour to ensure that they understand the concepts that are part of the 4-hour program. So right now, Fertilizer Canada already has some materials on their website around 4-hour nutrient stewardship, and I think we'll be looking to probably bolster those and have resources available to the retailers to help them with the staff training. Obviously, a big focus is around those staff that are making the recommendations, as you'll see in T3. You know, we want to see locations to have at least, hopefully have at least one CCA that has the 4-hour specialty, and then a number of other CCAs that are making those recommendations, or at least overseeing the recommendations if it's non-CCA staff. We also are recognizing the certified nutrient management consultants, because those are the ones that are doing nutrient management plans for those customers that have livestock and poultry. Next page. And then T4, once again, is, you know, the sales and application staff, and there has to be proof of that training is taking place. Obviously, if the staff member is a CCA in good standing, that is all the auditor needs to see, because they have to have their training updated in order to maintain that CCA. If they're the non-CCA, then you have to have records on file, you know, showing what meetings and events they've attended that included 4-hour or related topics in the agendas. Then 5 and 6 in this category are about grower education. So there's also a requirement of the nutrient service provider, which in this case for the most part would be the crop input retailer, that they have make information available to their grower customers through either through events that they organize or sponsor, and also maybe distribute through mail or electronic, and so have proof that that information was distributed to them, so that they're making an effort to educate their grower customers about 4-hour nutrient stewardship. Next. Now we'll move into recommendations. So there's a couple of key elements around the recommendation. Number one, there has to be a soil test in place to support the recommendation. R1 discusses the minimum requirements for that soil test. It has to be an OMAP accredited lab, which includes organic matter, phosphorus using the Olson method, potassium level and pH. This is just a minimum, so there are other things, micronutrients, CEC, you can spray for phosphorus as well, depending on your situation. We're not restricting that, but that gives the minimum standard. And the requirement is that the soil test is conducted at least once every 4 years that is being used for that recommendation. R3 gets into then that it's not just the most recent soil test that is incorporated into the recommendation, but also previous results as well, so you can track trends around organic matter, phosphorus levels, those types of things. And then R4, the soil tests are taken at an appropriate depth from a relatively uniform area no larger than 25 acres. 25 acres has kind of always been that maximum that has been recommended in the past. We added the wording around relatively uniform areas because obviously the push, and we see this evolving into more site-specific through either grid or zone sampling, breaking those larger areas into more smaller uniform areas as we move forward. Next page. And then number five, we're getting into manure. If it is implied, the content and total available nutrients are based on either OMAFRA's database average or using sampling and analysis following recognized guidelines. The reason for the option in this is quite often the ability of a farmer to test the current manure sample before it is applied can be a challenge, especially in liquid manure situations where it needs to be agitated before you would get even close to a representative sample. So by using the database, that allows gives a good guideline for the retailer and the farmer to work with when trying to determine nutrient levels being applied. But we still will encourage the collection and analysis of the current manure as well, because that's the data that goes into maintaining the database and making sure it's current and reflective of current conditions. Six and seven just are about, and maybe of interest to some of you, but make sure that you're making recommendations and applications. They adhere to minimum setbacks for all known sensitive areas and listed there. We're certainly encouraging our members to, as the retailers, when they're talking to their farmers, making sure to find out if they're part of, and Clean Water Act, if they're part of sensitive areas where there may be some heightened requirements, need to be on the same page as that, and those requirements need to be incorporated into the plans moving forward. Next page. So number eight is just a requirement that all sources of nutrients are accounted for in the nutrient stewardship plan. Obviously, the 4R program has a fertilizer focus, but when making recommendations, all nutrient sources have to be incorporated into the plan for it to be following the 4R standards. Nine, the crop yield goals are discussed with the grower and based on previous crop yield history. Basically just saying you have to be able to support what you do, and the yield goals have to be credible for the area and the farmer you're working with. So when an audit happens, the auditor will be pulling some files and going through those with the retailer, and basically the retailer's responsibility is to show, okay, here's what we recommended, and then be able to prove through documentation that that recommendation was credible. And having appropriate yield goals, oil tests are a big part of that. And then 10 gets into the recommendation source allowed to be used by the retailer or whoever is making the recommendation. And these, the rates are at or below limits specified by nutrient application recommendations recognized by a government or academic institution that reflects growing conditions consistent with those of the customer. So in the Ohio program, which we used as the template for developing this one, they referenced Tri-State, which is the main recommendation source for that area, which is an academic body. There is the Ontario recommendations that many use, but those in farming in the Southwest, if the growing conditions are similar to what Ohio and Indiana might have, you're free to use the Tri-State as long as you can document why that's applicable. It also, this allows for those livestock and poultry producers who are using NMAN as part of their management plans, it allows it to be a recognized recommendation source as well. The recommendation may also allow for adaptive management, which is based on documented on-field, on-farm data. So if you're whoever's making the recommendation is doing work with a farmer and has some years of research, farm trial, field trials, et cetera, and can document why an extra 20 pounds would make a difference, even though it's higher than what would normally be recommended by one of the other sources, you can do so. There will be some guidelines around using adaptive management that will be sent out to all the participants. Okay, next. And then 11 and 12 are around nitrogen. Obviously, the focus and kind of the drive for why we're doing this is around phosphorus loading into the Great Lakes. However, we know that there's issues around nitrogen, whether it be greenhouse gas or water quality, that we're going to have to be addressed as well, and so we want to make sure that the 4R program covers that. Basically, these two requirements around nitrogen are that, 12, that you discuss with your customer different options for nitrogen management, including split application, nitrification inhibitors, and slow-release technologies. With the producer's sign-off, and then recommending that if urea or UAN is broadcast and not incorporated within 12 hours, that it be recommended to be applied with an enhanced efficiency and so pushing for the use of these products where applicable. Okay, we'll move to application. The first one is kind of an obvious one. Application records shall not exceed recommendations. For custom-applied acres, we do allow acceptable margin of error for calibrated equipment. Don't want someone to fail just because they were 101 pounds instead of 100 on the application. Number two, we're strongly recommending injection, subsurface banding, or broadcasting with immediate incorporation of phosphorus, unless the risk has been demonstrated to be low according to a provincially approved phosphorus index risk assessment procedure. So this one we're hoping that I know there's being work being done to develop a phosphorus index for Ontario, and so hopefully that'll be in place and that'll be something that an effective tool. In the Ohio version of this, they allowed for exemptions for continuous no-till and cover crops. But we made the decision through our science and tech committee to remove those, but hopefully the phosphorus index will take those into account when you go through that process. Three, crop nutrient applications are neither made nor recommended to be made on frozen or snow-covered ground, just following along with what's being done, obviously, with manure in the province. Next. Total application of phosphorus not to exceed quantity needed for the next 2 years of planned crops, so limiting to a two-year load for any application of phosphorus. Five, the nutrient basically says the nutrient plan has to be at least no more than 3 years old that is being used, so just encouraging the retailers and the farmers to regularly go over their cropping plan and update it as they go. Six, application equipment must be calibrated at least annually. That's something for the most part that's being done. Just need to make sure that that's getting documented for the purpose of the audit. Number seven is a new element we're bringing into this, and state the broadcast applications of crop nutrients without immediate incorporation are neither made nor recommended unless a documented local weather forecast, either private or government generated, which is verifiable, indicates less than a 50% chance of rainfall event involving more than 25 millimeters or 1 inch of rain during the next 12 hours. So this will be a change, how things are done. The retailer will be required to print off a local weather forecast every morning. We want that forecast to be consistent so that they're not printing off three or four and picking the one that suits them the best that day. It needs to be consistent. And if they have an over 50% chance of a 1-inch rainfall, then they should not be incorporating, or they should not be applying custom, and are should not be recommending application to any other grower customers to do themselves. It's a risk management process. It's not going to be perfect. There's going to be chances at times when the forecast says greater than 50% chance and you don't end up getting anything, and there'll be sometimes when the forecast doesn't show anything and we do get a 1-inch rain. Once again, the retailer will not be penalized if that occurs, as long as they follow the proper procedures. I'll go to the next. Eight, where infield variability in crop nutrient need or environmental risk is identified and variable rate application is warranted, site-specific nutrient application is used. This is one we changed somewhat from Ohio. Ohio is very much pushing variable rate technology and setting targets. We realize that since this is an Ontario program, the implementation of variable rate is at different levels across the province, and we didn't want that to be an initial barrier to retailers participating in the program, that they felt they had to go out and buy new equipment or software just to participate. But it does recognize that if you can identify that there is a need, you can do some site-specific nutrient application. And it also allows that you don't need variable rate and necessarily fancy technology. Simply turning off the PTO on the spreader in certain areas would count as a site-specific nutrient application, maybe in those sensitive areas I mentioned earlier in the webinar. So I maybe should, good time to mention it, you know, here that this is a living document. If continuous improvement will be a key to what we're doing. We're already seeing in Ohio where they're starting to evolve some of their standards based on the experience. I'm sure we'll see the same thing here. Also, more and more research is being conducted on nutrient management and impact of crop nutrients on water quality, and as those results come out, they'll be incorporated into these well. Nine, the records of nutrient application, what they need to include, all fairly basic information. Number 10, no application of fall nitrogen other than co-applied with phosphorus sources or to meet fall planting nitrogen requirements. So this is another one that we took from Ohio and adapted. I don't think there's a lot of fall nitrogen being applied for the sake of applying in Ontario that we see maybe in Ohio. But when you apply fall MAP or DAP, there will be a nitrogen content as part of that, so we don't want to, my screen just died, so I'm switching to my notes here. There will be some nitrogen that's included in MAP and DAP, so we wanted to allow for that. And then also, if you're planting winter wheat or cover crop, there may be a nitrogen requirement in order to establish those. So we just want to allow for that. Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, no, next page. And then we move on to documentation. So the first one is this a list nutrient service providers supposed to provide, listing clients and acres by the categories of full service, recommendation only, application only, an estimate of other acres. Mostly this is done for the benefit of the auditor. The auditor will receive this list at the start of the audit, and that will allow them to determine how many files to pull in those categories in order to have a representative audit. Two, a nutrient service provider maintains records related to nutrient application recommendations, and that can be hard copy or electronic, and for the most part that's being done today. Number three, the records related to the grower customers are kept confidential by the nutrient service provider and are made available for review during an audit. This basically is a confidentiality statement that will be signed by the retailer and the auditor that confirms that the retailer is doing everything they can to protect the privacy of their customers, but they are allowing the auditor to review selected files. Those files are reviewed on site. Nothing leaves the facility during the audit period, and the auditor, by signing, says not to be sharing any of this information outside of that retailer. Four, the retailer must keep the relevant national, provincial, municipal laws related to nutrient recommendations and applications. Five, about individual field records and what they must contain. Six and seven, the nutrient recommendations are reviewed and acknowledged in writing by the grower customer and then also signed off by a certified professional, which would at least be a CCA, if not the CCA with the 4R specialty. Number eight, the plans include the information about yield goals, also all the information about the known sensitive areas. Well, and then number nine is the requirement that they are must list the watershed and sub-watershed where that farm is located. And that's something I think the watershed is probably not a big issue, but that's something we may want to, as for our Ontario, work with Conservation Ontario to make sure there's information resources available to the retailers to help with identifying the sub-watershed. So that concludes the audit standards that are being proposed.
Perfect. Thank you, Ron. So at this time, we'll prompt a short post-webinar poll. Similar to the pre-webinar poll, you'll be prompted with questions one at a time. There's a total of two post-webinar questions, and you can answer one to five accordingly. We'll give you about 2 minutes to answer these questions, and then once the questions have been completed, we'll continue on to a question and answer period. Again, please feel free to let me know if you experience any technical difficulties during the poll. Okay, thank you for your participation in today's webinar, and thank you for completing the pre- and post-webinar polls. It's much appreciated. We'll now open the floor to the participants for questions and comments regarding the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program, the Ontario 4R Certification Program, or the 4R Certification Standards, or any other questions or concerns you might have related to the webinar material. I will ask, since we have about 45 to 50 attendees at today's webinar, that you either ask your question by raising your hand using the Raise Your Hand button on the GoToWebinar platform on the right sidebar, or you can also type in your question into the chat function. This also allows your question to be anonymous, as we can read your question aloud over the phone. So at this time, I'll open the floor for questions and look to both speakers to see who will call upon first. So I see that Greg Zamchenik, sorry if I didn't say that properly, has his hand raised. So feel free to ask your question now if you'd like.
Yeah, sorry, Mackenzie. Will this PowerPoint be available on the Fertilizer Institute website or anyplace else?
That's a great question. So I didn't mean to mention at the end of the webinar that the PowerPoint slide with the notes as well as the already circulated proposed standards in both English and French will be available. The presentation that's been given today isn't available on our website, but it is available as a download in the handout section of the webinar platform.
In the handout section of the webinar, okay.
Sure. So it's kind of like a right sidebar. You can see the orange arrow. And then just near the bottom, it should say handout 3 out of 5 or 3 handouts. And one of those being the PowerPoint presentation.
Hmm.
Yeah, I can also email you a copy, of course.
We'll email it out to all the registrants.
Yeah, we'll email it.
I can't seem to find that, so that would be...
Does anyone have any questions at this time? Again, you can raise your hand or type a question into the chat. Okay, so I have a couple of questions that have come in so far. The first one is that saying that you would appreciate letting the attendees know how conservation authorities can participate in the program, more specifically with promotion, training, becoming certified, demonstration sites, etc. So maybe I'll pass that to both Anne as the Conservation Ontario representative and involvement there, and potentially Cassandra Cotton with Fertilizer Canada as well. Anne, would you like to speak to that question first?
Sure. So I guess the first thing I thought of is I know a lot of conservation authorities will have some meetings throughout the year, have an opportunity to speak. I think there might be an opportunity to get someone in as one of your speakers to talk about the 4-hour program, because it doesn't have a lot of good recognition yet in the farming community, is my feeling. Perhaps more in the southwest part of Ontario, they know a bit more about it. I know here in the Grand River watershed, there's not very much awareness yet of the 4-hour program. So definitely to get in a speaker about the 4Rs. This retailer certification program is basically actions that will be taken by the retailer and the producer. So it's not something that I can really see a direct role for the conservation authorities in terms of meeting those standards, but certainly to help provide that mapping, which the retailers are going to require. Ron referred to that need to know exactly what watershed or sub-watershed the fields are located in. Also, there might be an opportunity to, as growers discuss these items with their CCAs, might be an opportunity to support the establishment of some buffer strips or something like that.
Yeah, for Fertilizer Canada, I definitely agree with Anne in terms of the promotion aspect, because this is focused at the retail level, that we definitely have breadth of speakers that can speak to this program and the forest generally, both from a policy perspective and a technical aspect. So, yeah. Thanks, Anne and Cassandra.
Mackenzie, can I just clarify that? So if the CAs are looking for a speaker, they should approach Cassandra?
Yep, they can approach me.
Okay.
Yep. Great, thank you. So the next question here I have is, the 4-hour program is voluntary for egg retailers, but is it voluntary for the egg retailers' customers as to whether or not they want to participate in the program? For example, provide sign-off on documentation, et cetera. So maybe I'll give the floor to Ron to answer that question at this point.
So as I mentioned at the start of my talk, you know, the retailers are audited on what they can control. So there are going to be certain instances where a producer is going to be doing things that may not necessarily follow the 4-hour protocols, but if they're doing them independently of the retailer will not be penalized for that. The signatures is going to be a challenge. I think the goal is to get to 100% moving forward, but we're going to have to see how that that works as we get started. What we're hoping for is that, you know, it's a voluntary program, and we're hoping that, you know, there will be the producer buy-in and that the producers will be looking for this and looking for it from the retailers, so it's not a retailer push on the producers, that is the producers pulling for the retailer to be providing the 4-hour services. I think in a number of meetings that I know myself and Dave Buttonham here at OABA have spoke at, the farmers are quite interested in 4-hour.
Okay.
They're very pleased to see that it's the retailers that are going through the audit process and basically kind of doing that heavy lifting on behalf of the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
But we're hoping the farmers will want to be associated with a retailer that is 4-hour certified moving forward.
I think it says, like, this is how you know you achieved your goal.
Okay, thanks, Ron. So the next question I have is, this is a voluntary program now. Is there any indication from government that this may be
that you have to fill in all the questions?
Yeah, so at this point, we definitely are, you know, essentially, industry and the ag industry, the retailers, are being looked at as being proactive on this front, and government has definitely recognized this program as a positive step forward in terms of voluntary, industry-led programming. So we don't see any need to go to regulation. I don't think there's discussion around that at this point, but that we're very supportive and the government is supportive of a voluntary industry-led approach that we're currently working towards.
Okay. Thanks, Cassandra. The next question I have is there funding available to help growers and service providers adapt to meet the standards or cover the extra cost of documentation?
Yeah, so currently what the program is offering as we roll this out in terms of support for joining the program and adapting to meeting these standards is providing a four-coach service. So essentially that the coach, you would request a coach, they would come in and do some pre-audit coaching with you. So let's say the auditing is set to take place from, you know, July to September, October, like in the fall period, that you could have a coach come in at no cost to you to walk you through the program, help you through your current documentation, flag anything that you need to have prepped beforehand that you might be missing, and that kind of go through that work with you. So that would be requested. And that would be provided without charge.
Okay, thanks, Cassandra. The next question that I have is, there is a requirement for application setbacks from sensitive areas. How are these defined? For example, gullies, quote unquote. Maybe I'll open the floor for Ron to answer that question first.
So, I mean, and this is the challenge with a program like this. What makes the 4Rs a great tool for nutrient stewardship is their flexibility. It's, you know, best management practices that meet the conditions at a very local level, whether it's at the farm level or down to the field level or down to part of a field. With the retailer certification, we're trying to codify some of those and make them consistent across, which is a challenge. I think there would be, in any of these cases, when the auditor comes in, whether it's a recommendation or whether it's a setback or whatever it is, it's up to the retailer being audited to be able to show what they did and prove why that was the appropriate amount. Obviously, if it's a setback that's flat versus a setback with a slope, it's going to be a different distance. So I don't think we want to put a hard and firm number in any of those. And I think this is something we will probably try and gather information and provide to retailers as a resource to help guide as they do
So the next question that I have here is, how is the 4R certification related to precision agriculture? So if Ann would like to, if Ron would like to speak to that question, maybe is best.
Sure. So I think we see precision agriculture as a very effective tool to help manage nutrient stewardship and to be able. Certainly, it provides value in a couple of areas. One, the ability to, you know, with variable rate technology, to apply nutrients at different rates in different areas of a field depending on conditions. Also, it's an excellent way to collect data. A big part of precision agriculture is all around data collection, and that data can be used to document what is done and why it is done. As I think I mentioned earlier around the variable rate technology, as I think moving forward, and we're already seeing it in Ohio, where they're starting to evolve their program that's in their third or fourth year at this point, and they're already evolving to include more elements and more requirements around precision ag and variable rate. That's likely something you will see here as well as the technology becomes available and readily used and the research around it becomes available as well. It will be incorporated more into the program.
Okay, thanks, Ron. The next question I have is probably best suited for Anne, so I'll read the question now. It says, many CCAs that I talk to about the program suggest that they have been implementing the 4Rs for years. If this is true, it wouldn't seem likely that the program would have an environmental / farm level impact. Do you have any comments on this?
That's not really a conversation that I have had with the CCAs. I suspect that some of these practices have been implemented. Maybe all of them have been, or most of them have been implemented. Maybe this will. There's usually some room for improvement, some room for additional education, and so forth. So I'm hoping that this will provide an incremental environmental benefit. And there will be some pressure if there are some, I guess, some applicators who are not following those standards. This will be some additional pressure for them to up their game a bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think just to follow up with Anne, we think that a lot of these practices are being used, but we don't know how much and we don't know how often. So the documentation part of this is going to be really key, because I think up till now, we've often said, well, we're doing the right thing, we're doing these things, and but nothing really to back it up. And we're at the point where we really need to be able to back up some of these claims. So I think the 4R will certainly help in providing some documentation and maybe putting some numbers behind how these practices are used and how what size and area and where they're being used.
So to clarify, Ron, for example, if someone says that there is a certain amount of phosphorus being broadcast in the fall, I'm thinking that with this documentation, the industry will be able to provide numbers on the degree to which that is happening, right?
Well, we would be able to show, X number of retailers that applied X number of acres are following 4R principles. Therefore, we know that if phosphorus is being broadcast in the fall, it's being
right.
Incorporated. And then we can hopefully track those numbers. And as we move forward, and I know the AWSA at the auditing are working on some of their reporting paperwork that goes along with the audit, and we're hoping that we'll be able to generate some additional data out of that as well that will help support some of these issues.
And maybe if the group doesn't mind, Ron, if I could weigh in. I'm Jim Campbell. I happen to be chair of the Nutrient Stewardship, for our Nutrient Stewardship Committee. And I think I understand the point of the question there, too. So, and we're a retailer. We're down in Kent County. We're in the Thames River watershed. and along Lake Erie, so we're fairly tight. So I think, and we employ 12 CCAs in our company here. So I would say that all 12 of my CCAs would say just what that questioner said, are that we have been doing the best we knew as a diligent CCA for a number of years. What this is really doing is implementing some new knowledge. So for example, let's take soil sampling. In our experience, something less than half of the acres in Ontario have a current soil sample. And so speaking to specifically the base saturation of phosphorus in the soil as we think about Lake Erie. So what will this do? This will increase, so somewhere approaching 100% of recommendations will be based on a current soil sample. So yes, reps, CCAs have been making good recommendations, but on the other side, soil sampling is not anywhere, has not been where it needs to be to meet the current understanding of 4Rs. So that doesn't mean the CCA didn't do the best they knew how to do, but we're getting new learning. I think when you move to fall application, I would say in the last 2 or 3 years, the industry has moved away rapidly from fall-applied, unincorporated phosphorus. But 5 years ago, we as a firm were doing a fair bit of that. So at that point, we were making good recommendations, best we knew, but we didn't have all the knowledge that we would have today. So I wouldn't contradict what a CCA said, as I've been doing this for years. This is incorporating the newest knowledge possible into ensuring that we are doing everything that science tells us to do today to reduce it. So nobody was purposely putting phosphorus into the watershed. But we know some things today to do an even better job. So I think you want to, so this is really about implementing of new, best known practices as we know them today.
Great, thanks Jim. So I don't have any other questions in the chat or hands raised at this time. I will give it a couple of minutes in case there are any more questions, and then if not, we'll move on to conclude the webinar. Thanks. So I have a question that just came in. It says, is there a long-term plan to implement this province-wide? So I'll just ask Cassandra to speak to that.
Yeah, so this actually is being implemented province-wide as of this year, so it is for all of Ontario in terms of the certification program. We do expect that a large portion of the uptake in the first year will be in the Lake Erie watershed basin area, or Great Lakes Basin. So we assume that it will be regionally, the uptake will be a lot higher in the first year or two, but it is being implemented this year as a first instance, and then, but it is province-wide. It's not specific to a certain region of Ontario. But, of course, the need will be higher in some regions.
So I have another couple of questions. The first one is, what was the uptake of 4R certification for retailers in Ohio? So I'll just turn to Cassandra.
Yeah, so in the Ohio certification program, it's a little bit different there as well, but they have essentially 45 currently certified branch facilities. 37 of those are located in the Western Lake Erie Basin. So it's very centralized in terms of the area that's in the most need. The program also does talk about how many acres are covered under the certification program and how many clients are served in terms of growers. So they're at about 6,000 growers and almost 3 million acres.
Perfect. Thanks, Cassandra. I'll just keep the chat open for a couple more minutes in case there's any last-minute questions. Since there aren't any more questions, I'll thank you again for joining today's webinar. I'll also note that we are currently still in the 45-day consultation period, which ends at the end of the month on February 28, 2018. I will bring your attention again to the handout section of the webinar platform where I've attached today's presentation with speaking notes and the standards, the proposed standards in both English and French. If you do, however, want a copy of any of these documents or if you would like to provide any comments or feedback, please contact myself, Mackenzie Smith, and at Fertilizer Canada, and my contact information will be left on the slide. Thank you again.